Welcome to this edition of Game Changers Live. This is your host, Dennis Trionos. Game Changers Live is sponsored by the Trionos Group, innovation in retained executive search in the marketing arena. Game Changers Live is the digital town square where we meet the leaders who are changing the landscape of the marketing world. Now let's get started with today's very special guest. Today I'm joined by my co-host for Game Changers Live, Norman Sherman. We're delighted to be here visiting with Mitch Kaplan and Gene Lewis. Mitch and Gene are principals in the New York-based digital marketing firm, Digital Pulp. Mitch, Gene, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Good to be here.
So here we are at Digital Pulp. What's the genesis of the company, and why the name Digital Pulp?
Well, in 96, it was a bunch of guys in a room, basically, with some Ethernet cable hanging from the ceiling, and a couple copies of Photoshop and Illustrator and BB Edit, and we basically started going down two paths, print and digital, hence Digital Pulp. We also discovered along the way that the digital pulp is actually a medical term for the tip of your finger, which is what you touch the world with. So we went with that, didn't really know what we were building, and suddenly found ourselves at the crest and eventual wave of the first push of the internet, and became really much more of a digital, pure digital play agency.
So what kind of clients does Digital Pulp work with, and who is sort of the ideal profile for a client?
Well, we work with a variety of different clients in a variety of different categories. It can run from companies that operate only in the online space to big packaged goods companies like Bausch & Lomb. We work with Continental and United. Continental is a longtime client of the firm, and now working with them and United in regard to their merger. Bausch & Lomb, as you know, is an eye care company up in Rochester. The firm has worked with them for many, many, many years on a bunch of different initiatives. H. Bloom, which is a large flower subscription company, and several other firms in a variety of categories. I think the perfect client for our firm is a company that wants to be innovative and a company that wants to do things differently. Obviously, we have a core specialty in the digital world, and one of our core competencies is in site development, but we do an awful lot of other things, including brand identity, online marketing, and really anything where technology touches the brand.
So there are so many digital agencies out there at this point, right? You probably can draw a circle 300 yards around your building here and probably knock down 10 of them, right? How do you position yourself in this very competitive marketplace? What is it that you tell prospects and potential employees about what makes you different?
I think the single biggest differentiator is that regardless of the type of work we're doing, whether it be branding, site development, full campaign development, is that at the end of the day, we really put the user first. And we don't just label them as customers, because I think that's a bit limiting in nature. But what got us through the sort of growth and the crash of the web bubble was the accountability of making sure that at the end of the day, we were taking the people we were trying to reach as the core group we were trying to reach and serve. And so whether that be in the messaging that we create, in the positioning that we develop, or the actual interface work, digital experience work that we do, always making sure that we're representing the people we're trying to reach is one of the two differentiators we've had.
So you mentioned both positioning and branding in your response just then. Very often digital shops are viewed as being very tactical, and positioning and branding is anything but tactical. Talk about that from your point of view about why that's important to your business.
Well, I think there's a couple of things there, which is there are a lot of digital marketing agencies in New York and in the country, and a lot of them are very competent in what they do. A lot of them are very competent in the development of what you've said, which is digital tactics. the building of websites, the building of online assets, those types of things. I think one of the other things that makes us different at Digital Pulp is a very strong desire, as Gene said, to understand the user and what they actually need, but also a very strong desire on our part to understand our client's company and their brand, its positioning in the marketplace, and what experiences we may or may not develop for that client that actually connect back to the brand promise. So we have a very strong desire and process around digging deep into understanding the company, its culture, the brands that they have and represent, what those brands stand for in the marketplace, the different attributes, before we even begin to think about whatever tactics or ideas we may wind up developing that go into the marketplace.
I think at the end of the day, if you just go down the tactics path, you can create a great-looking app, great, you know, great functioning website, but the spirit, the essence, getting some emotion going, getting those goosebumps and getting someone to really interact with the brand. If you don't have that branding component, you're not actually delivering a great product.
Mitch, I've known you for a long time, and I've known you to be a pretty good storyteller, right? And I think part of the brand of Digital Pulp, from what our research showed, is that you're very focused on telling stories in a digital format. Tell us what that's about, and how does digital storytelling differ from storytelling through print or TV or radio, for that matter?
Well, I think there's a couple of ways to answer that question. The first is, in order for us to really help our clients to be successful, and one of the things we talk about at Digital Pulp is our whole objective is to make great things happen. And great things mean great outcomes for our clients in the development of the kind of solutions we come up for with them in order to help their brand and their companies grow in the marketplace. So whether we're working with, we have a very strong competency in the EDU space. We work with a lot of colleges and universities like Harvard and NYU. Those brands, in a very similar fashion to a Continental or a Bausch & Lomb or a Mikimoto, which is the world's leading manufacturer of jewelry that includes pearls, they have a story to tell. They have very unique propositions that make them different from other companies and universities and schools and online entities in their category. So I think that from the perspective of our being able to position and promote a brand properly, we have to find the right way to tell their story. So that means from a strategic standpoint, we have to dig deep to have a real understanding about what it is about them that we can use to leverage, to talk about them differently. I think if you go to the NY Stern website, you'll see Possibilities is the story that we're telling for them. And it's beautifully articulated in the way we talk about the experience of going to NYU Stern and then the experience that you have when you go to the website. So I think storytelling is essential across the board because, first of all, everything is digital now. No matter what a client is doing, everything touches technology or digital in some way, shape, or form. And the ability to tell those stories across all these different platforms is very important for us as brand marketers at a minimum. And then from an implementation and creative standpoint, the different ways to go about telling those stories, I'll let Gene talk a little bit about that.
I mean, I think very simply, to get across anything in this world, telling a story is probably the best delivering mechanism you can have. People love listening to stories. They have a high degree of emotional resonance for most people. So, and every client we've ever had can have a story. Just finding out what that story is and how to deliver it in the digital space is really the trick.
This is Dennis Troianos for Game Changers Live, and we're talking to Gene Lewis and Mitch Kaplan of Digital Pulp.
Guys, you talked about focusing on the consumer. You talked about user experience. You talked about storytelling. When you talk about focusing on that consumer and making the experience a positive one, what do you think about? How do you go about doing that?
I think the real sort of core to our process is to understand, obviously research is sort of a basis for everything at the start. So understanding who we're talking to, what we're trying to deliver, and really how to shape that experience around those core essence needs of a consumer. I think that's sort of the center of the process. But for me, there's always this moment of a spark for us. And the spark is the essence, the simplest set of language, set of words that we can use to describe the overall strategy and message that's going to really reach our customers, our readers, whatever the type of experience we're developing is. We really want to make sure we understand what the essence of what that experience is going to be driven by. And it helps our creative team, it helps our copywriters, it helps our engineers, whatever you're doing on a project, making sure that you keep that spark essence in front of you as the guiding principle for the project, sort of the boiled down element of the project, that's really our driving force. It's sort of the evolution of the creative brief in the digital space.
So is what's commonly known as user experience a subset of what you're talking about in terms of experience and how you might bring technology into bear and so forth?
Yeah, I would say that in the age of Apple, the user experience is no longer limited to just an interface. I would say the experience of opening a package, of hearing a sound, of seeing a website, of being in a vehicle, whatever your experience of a brand might be, that user experience has broadened beyond what the traditional definition of it is. So subset, I think you could argue that on a big picture level, we are designers of the user experience wherever that touch point might be, not just interface.
When you talk about creating this spark essence, resonating with the consumer, connecting with the viewer or the listener, how do you do that? I mean, what is it that you do, and how did you learn how to do it so you can connect with people at that through this digital medium?
I think it takes a lot of listening. Our process, even back in that sort of more traditional, pure web development play, started with discovery, and that discovery piece in listening to a client's challenge of what they're dealing with and what their essence is, that's sort of the start of the spark process for us. And so when we go through the process of developing that language, it's first listening to clients, it's then listening to the customers and audiences they're trying to reach, and finding out what the core challenge is and what the solution could potentially bring. So our process is really built around that building that essential message that's going to get people to act.
So I'm going to push you a little further, okay, because we meet literally hundreds of agency executives who are really good listeners, but they come up with the wrong conclusion. Mm-hmm. All right, what I want to get to is listening is only as good as the ability to come up with the right conclusion after listening.
Sure.
So I want to get a little sense from you of what do you do as an organization and as a professional that allows you to not only listen, but to actually come up with a conclusion that makes the cash register ring.
I think it's probably challenging a status quo that might exist for a lot of our clients.
Okay.
I think clients come in with a presumption about who they are and what they're trying to do and who they're trying to reach. I think it's our job to call them on all of their intrinsically built-in assumptions about their brand and about their language and how they see themselves. And I call ourselves digital therapists at the end of the day, and not simply accepting a client's answer, but pushing them further to consider what's really at stake, not letting internal audiences drive the goal of the project. I think that workshop process has yielded time and again a high degree of clarity and branding engagement that I think prior to working with us really just wasn't there.
So my wife is a psychotherapist and sometimes does...
A psychiatrist.
Oh, really? Well, then my wife sometimes does sessions to people in China on Skype, and she gets off and refers to herself as a digital therapist. You're not the same thing, right?
My dad actually did a therapy session with someone in Hong Kong, so I say same thing on Skype. I think clients want to be heard, but they want to be challenged more than anything, because within an organization, you're not going to get challenged by people around you as much. And so our job is to come in, look objectively, represent the people we're trying to reach and really challenge. Is what you're saying to us really the essence of what you're trying to deliver? Can we get through the clutter of what you've assumed to be true about yourselves? And that challenge, that therapy session, can often get heated, but at the end of it, I think people come out feeling better and more clearly defined as a brand, as an organization.
I think the other part of it is both a cultural thing for us as an organization and how it informs how we work, which is we have a very collaborative, transparent culture in which everyone has an equal voice, and we spend an awful lot of time talking about our clients' business. And I think it becomes apparent early on that we're not going to be successful unless we have really, to Gene's point, are conducting ourselves as a therapist for the brand and the business, but really interrogating the critical things that are important to determine what's going to be a positive outcome for the brand and for the organization. Because to your point, if we nail the brand but the business outcome isn't strong, then one side isn't feeding the other. So it's very important for us that up front that we feel that we have a client that what happens typically is you get briefed, you run off, you develop a whole bunch of things, they get implemented, they get done, as opposed to an ongoing level of collaboration, transparency, conversation, pushback, disagreement, agreement, so that we're absolutely positive before we've even started to build anything, develop anything, that we have an absolute understanding of the company's goals, both from a business perspective and from a brand perspective, so that the user experience informs all of that. There's this great saying in the digital world, especially when it comes to site development, which is, don't build it, they won't come, in that we feel very strongly about having the ability, ensuring we have clients that agree to and buy into our philosophy of, we're going to come to you what we think is absolutely right, whether or not it's what you came to us for. We want to ensure that the solutions we come up with are going to drive your business and drive your brand, and that's going to take a lot of collaboration, a lot of conversation, a lot of transparency, so that we're sure that we are developing solutions that are going to drive those positive outcomes.
So do you find that your clients are often willing to let you into their business enough so that what you do can be evaluated against business objectives as opposed to merely communications objectives?
I think typically we require it, and it's one of the things that when we first meet a client in the pitching process, we talk about needing as part of our key elements of success. So what I love most about my job, beyond the creative things and the product and the people I work with, is the fact that I get to experience and learn about businesses and organizations that run the gamut. Airlines, luxury goods, nonprofits, higher learning institutions. I can tell you more about lens care and what it's like to actually get accepted to Harvard Law School than most people you know. And it's because we live and breathe not just the brand, but how a business actually functions. And questions that you would never normally think to be part of the digital process are part of ours. So at the end of the day, defining success goes beyond just number of click-throughs or number of visits. It's at the end of the day, what's going to make your business successful and how does it work in other areas of the company. So for me, that's I think that's probably the essential part. And if people don't do that when doing what we do, I think it's inevitably going to be a bit out of touch and disconnected.
Great.
One of the things that we hear from folks who know your work is that there is a level of visual beauty to what you guys do. And when you look at your design elements, what is the key to having that design really reflect the brand, communicate in an easy and appetizing way to the consumer? And in fact, do design elements have a fashion aspect to it? Is there a trend that is in one day and maybe out the next, or is good design sort of timeless? A lot of questions there, I know.
Let me see. I think good design in some ways is timeless, but not because of a specific aesthetic, but because of, I think, a consistency around the simplicity of what you're trying to deliver. I think what constitutes, we used to be a little bit more of an agency where you could look at a design and say, that's a digital pulp design. It was sort of very elemental in its interface. It was focused around the simplicity of, simple, beautiful shapes and organization that was light and open. I think in the past few years, we've matured into really embracing different types of visual executions, whether it be something as luxurious as Mitch mentioned, Mikimoto or an H. Bloom, or something as people-oriented as NYU Stern. These types of sites all have different elements to them, but I think what makes our design shine is that it really is focused at the end of the day on keeping that user experience we talked about that goes beyond the interface, keeping that at the heart of what we do. So taking a client's image and colors and tones and bringing it to life in a way that feels simple, focused, and usable, I think is really the essence of how we design.
I find the concept of design very interesting. Not too long ago, design was viewed as, visual elements that you can see. Design seems to have taken on a much greater definition of design principles and thinking and developing innovative approaches to things. When you talk about design, how would you define it from your point of view here?
I think we keep using this term throughout this talk with the user interface, but I think the user interface is now becoming art. What made the iPhone great was not that it had just a beautiful form factor or it looked cool or it did certain capabilities and features. And that's what you're now seeing other companies try to reproduce, is that sort of basic surface element. What made it great was that the interface was a piece of art. It was something that boiled it down to something so intuitive, 2-year-old could pick it up and use it. And what we're doing now is we're finding that with digital technology progressing the way it is, we can take that interface and make it not just a subset of the experience, but the experience itself. The interface can be part of the brand. H. Bloom is an example of that. The store, the experience of actually selecting flowers and subscribing to the service, it's an elevated one. It's so simple and so intuitive, anyone can do it. And that becomes part of the brand. So I think Apple has redefined, along with several other companies and sort of evolving startups in the industry, has turned what previously was almost the bureaucracy of the digital experience into part of the brand itself, realizing that things do not have to be complicated. You look at a company like JetBlue, you approach the kiosk, the interface elements are big and bright and simple, they are friendly, the language is inviting. So what previously was considered to be utilitarian and process-oriented is now part of the experience of being welcomed into that airport onto that plane. And I think that that's where we try to live now.
I would think that this philosophy of yours is really advantageous as you move into the mobile world, where development, digital development, is so much more challenging because the space you have to live in is so much more confined. Is that an accurate assessment?
It's absolutely true. I think we're finding it easier to migrate into digital experiences because of exactly that reason. The mobile screen and the experience and the interface options you have are very, very limited. And the space you have to work in is pretty confined. So boiling it down to those essentials, we often call the mobile experience an abridged experience. But the reality is it's less about abridged than it is about being focused. And I think that has intuitively been something we've really embraced pretty heavily.
You're listening to Game Changers Live, and today we're visiting with Digital Pulp. Gene, part of the issue of mobile communications is one that has really had us focus on sort of the future of where communications is moving. Is there any factors that you can pinpoint that make one kind of mobile communications different as a medium from others? For example, an iPhone versus an iPad. Do folks use those communications devices differently? Is there a different medium? Are they a different medium, or are they just the same medium, only smaller or larger?
I think there's a big debate as to whether the iPad is, in fact, a mobile device. I could argue that a laptop is a mobile device. I can carry it around with me. But I think an iPad, you know, there are two ways of looking at it. There's what's portable and what are you using in your portable life. So when you're walking around the city or around your office, what are you carrying with you that you interface with? That's one definition of mobile. And the other is form factor. And for us, form factor is a key element of what the design and the experience will actually be. So how you use it and what you use it on are the two factors in mobile. From our standpoint, the mobile device that is truly, say, the ultra portables of the handheld, that is about convenience and speed and efficiency. It's about using space in a very effective way. It's about creating shortcuts whenever possible and utilizing the full suite of technologies, things like GPS, give you. In a somewhat semi-portable way, in a lifestyle way, an iPad is a somewhat more unique experience, and if you make it a site iPad friendly with swiping, it's a very different mentality to use a mouse than a finger. I think that experience can be driven very much by the form factor of the physical device, not as much about the mobile factor.
Now some of our research is starting to show that the bloom may be off the rose a little bit on downloading applications, that users are not using applications to the degree they used to, and that fewer and fewer are being downloaded. Assuming that your research shows the same thing, what's the next generation of thing to do with the user experience in terms of mobile marketing?
I think that the trend is difficult to I don't know if that's true across all categories of apps. I think what's happening now is that mobile sites themselves are getting better, and so people are learning that they can interface with their favorite brands and companies and products without having to download the app. But as far as the next in mobile marketing is concerned, it's going to be interesting to see. I think a lot of it's going to be through a lot of the portals we already use. You look at the Facebooks of the world, the LinkedIn for the professional community. You look at evolving platforms like Pinterest. You look at situations like Flipboard. And I would expect that a lot of the marketing we're going to see evolving as a lot of these companies turn into their monetary generation phases are going to be based around advertising in those areas where people live and breathe the digital experience in their mobile world. But it's going to be hard to say. I think judging from past performances, mobile advertising and marketing has been something that has never seen one golden solution. It has seen an evolution throughout the last few years, and to see where it's going to go is going to be very, very interesting.
I'd like to move the conversation or discussion of talent, right? In the agency world, you might have nice offices, but if you don't have talent, you're not going to be very successful. What do you look for in the kind of people who will be successful here at Digital Pulp?
I think, generally speaking, I look for someone who has an interest in really being part of something where they can affect change in a very significant way. I don't want anyone to come into work thinking, I'm working from 9 to 6, whatever, or 8 to 6, 8 to 7. I don't want someone coming into the office thinking, I'm just checking in for a job. I want someone with a mission and purpose. And beyond just creating beautiful work, I want people to feel connected to the clients that they're working for. So for me, someone who is interested not in necessarily the big agency world or who has been in the big agency world and comes to Digital Pulp with an interest in getting a smaller tier environment, I think that's one of the first characteristics I look for. And beyond that, I want someone who is going to be as talented as I can possibly find. I mean, for me, visual talent, writing talent, the ability to manage people, you can find talent in every way, shape, or form. And it's not easy to find that. I mean, talent, especially in this competitive marketplace, is a rare find. But they are the gems of the organization.
We have about a minute left, so what we'd like to do is conclude with a discussion of what's in the future for Digital Pulp. If we were sitting here 6 months, a year, or 2 years from now, what would we be seeing in terms of changes in the agency and the direction of the firm?
Well, I think that from a direction of the firm standpoint, I think we're moving towards putting ourselves in a position where we are able to engage clients more and more on marketing issues, not just digital issues. Because the reality, at least for us and our philosophically belief, everything is digital. everything should and needs to touch technology that needs to be taken into consideration. So as we move forward, we're aligning ourselves more around talent, to your question before, and our ability to engage clients around marketing strategies and how those get implemented flawlessly into the marketplace. So, you know, we have a very particular culture. We like to think that it's a fantastic place to work. Gene's one of the founders. You don't stick around for 16 years unless you've built a great culture. We want to attract the kind of talent that wants to engage clients around marketing issues and then deliver simple, beautiful, highly productive solutions for our clients that actually drive great results for them. Because at the end of the day, if we're not doing that, then nothing else really matters.
I think we want to become the agency that takes advantage of the evolution of the perception of marketing, which is that no longer is digital a complete add-on. It is now becoming much more the hub and the center of the experience. So we want to be the agency that helps serve that in reality.
Gene, Mitch, thank you for joining us on Game Changers Live. I want to thank my co-host, Norman Sherman, and join us next time on Game Changers Live. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.